Okay, just started recording. The 2016 World's Worst Polluted Places Report release. Audio press conference call. It's 5:09. Hello, who joined?
Hey, it's Laura.
Oh, okay. Hi.
It's Brett too. Hi, Laura.
All right. We're being recorded, so be careful.
I heard that. I was notified.
Oh, you were already there. Oh, does it actually say that when you enter your code?
Correct.
Oh. All righty. So, Brett, you're the only one who doesn't have a script.
Okay. This is the brass meeting, right?
You're so funny.
Yeah, Larry, I don't know if you caught it. There's been a number of occasions where we, like three calls happening at the same time.
Welcome. Who joined?
This is David, Angela.
Okay. Hi.
Hi, you're Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
Morning, David. Morning, Stefan. It's Brett.
Good morning, Brett. Well,
hey,
good
Brett.
Afternoon for myself.
Hi, who joined?
Jack Caravano. Hi.
All right.
Though there's only one Jack, I guess. So.
Who's?
Hey, Jack. Brett.
Hey, Brett. Where are you? At home or?
I'm in the office.
Yeah. All right. I'm sending out the updated script. So who is pressing their buttons there? We can hear
someone
dialing.
It's me.
Okay.
I'm just seeing that Natalie doesn't forget the time.
Okay.
Yeah, sie ist ein Drügel.
Yeah. Now,
okay.
My,
what? Okay.
Hi, gang. This is Jack. My comments for the European press conference are different for my section. My fuller comments are the same, but my other comments will be different.
Okay.
Hello, who joined?
Kevin Enix from Voice of America.
Oh, hi, Kevin. Welcome.
Thank you.
Got our internal folks on the line. You're the first journalist.
All right, great.
So we usually give, you know, people like 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay, that's no worries. I'm fine. I just wanted
you
to
can,
get
yeah,
it
you
up.
Can multitask, right?
Yeah.
We're expecting about 10 journalists.
Okay. Darn.
So now I know how the Voice of America is.
How is the Voice of America? Well, we...
Yes.
We
it's a male voice, obviously.
Yes. we trundle on, you know. Does the report, is it going to go up on the website at 9 as well?
It should be up
by now.
Yep.
Okay. No, that's where I'm going to go right now.
Yep. All the images, fact sheets.
So, and you guys will all go to vote in 2 weeks from now.
Absolutely.
Yes, we will.
What?
Hi, who joined? Hello, this is the World's Worst Polluted press conference. Who joined?
Hello, this is Natalie Giese from Green Cross Switzerland.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi, okay. Angela.
Yep.
I guess.
Hi, welcome. Who joined?
Carol Sumkin.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. So far we've got Kevin Enix from Voice of America, and Stefan was just asking him about
About
no,
voting?
You're the voice of America.
then be very afraid.
Nice voice.
What were you asking about voting?
What do you think is the voter turnout in presidential election? Is it sort of half of the country or two-thirds of the country going to vote?
I think we probably hit our peak in Obama's first,
mm-hmm.
2008, or our peak in the past 20 years. I mean, I
is
have,
that
but what I do, from what I've seen, I can only tell you what I've seen, is that voter turnout has been a little bit depressed on both sides because both candidates and favorables are fairly high.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
But you expect that half of America goes voting, or?
We can hope that we get at least half, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. So that's the region where turnout is.
Yeah, yeah.
So I heard another beep. Who joined?
Hey, good morning. It's Jennifer Joy Madden of DurableHuman.com.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Welcome.
Thank you. Put myself on mute in case my dog barks.
Sure, that's fine. When I was driving in this morning, I heard on NPR in the fight for Mosul, they're like Facebook live streaming the military action and the fight.
Yeah.
Did anybody hear that?
I haven't seen that yet today.
I did hear it.
I heard about it. I didn't log into the website to see it.
That's just really
that is weird.
Development.
Live streaming a war. As it's going on.
I just saw a guy last night who shot the two cops who live streamed the event and then was taunting the police over Facebook Live yesterday.
Really? Where was this?
It was in our great country.
Oh, that's
awesome. But I can't, you know, I think it was in, it was in the Midwest, Oklahoma. I don't know why I'm fixating on Oklahoma.
Wow. Hi, who joined?
Oklahoma, yes.
Hi, this is Sophia.
Hi, Sophia.
Yep.
You're at Columbia University?
Yeah, I'm at the Earth Institute.
Yep.
Okay, so we have a graduate student who's observing.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Mm-hmm. Welcome, and great that you think environment is an area where it's worth to invest energy.
No,
and lifetime.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to give folks one more minute and then we'll start. Hi, welcome to the press conference. Who joined?
Hi, this is Katie from the Associated Press.
Oh, hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I'm so glad you could join us. All right, so it's 9:04, so we will commence, and as people join in, we'll try and welcome them. All right, well, thank you all for coming. My name's Angela Bernhardt. I'm the Director of Communications. Just a reminder to everyone who's on the phone, please mute your phones while you're listening. All the materials are live now on our website. It's www.worstpolluted.org. The report is there for download. The photos are there. We've got a great photo collection, many of them donated by Larry Price. The press release and fact sheets are there. So what we're going to do is have our speakers give a brief overview and then have a Q&A with the journalists. So our first speaker, I'll just go through the speakers for you, Dr. Jack Karavanos. He's the Pure Earth Research Director and Professor at the NYU College of Global Health. Next, Brett Erickson will speak. He's our Director of Operations at Pure Earth. And then David Hanrahan, who will speak. He's our Head of Global Programs. Then Dr. Stefan Robinson, who is with Green Cross Switzerland, will make some comments. And then Natalie Giese, who's the Executive Director of Green Cross Switzerland, will make a brief presentation, and then we will open it up to Q&A. So over to you, Jack Karavanos.
Thank you, Angela. Hello, everybody. My name is Jack Karavanos. I'm Director of Research at Pure Earth, and as Angela said, Professor of Environmental Health at NYU. I'll be representing Richard Fuller for this introduction, given he's traveling at the moment, so he's the big boss. Pure Earth, with its partner Green Cross, is really excited to present this 11th annual report. Allow me to say that this year's report is beautifully done, with striking pictures and some great data. The pictures Larry Price provided are just amazing. I hope you enjoy it. This year, we represent an update of the top 10 polluting industries. But unlike previous years, this assessment is done based on how much disease is being produced. We feel there's a better way of assessing human harm. Think of it this way. A small contaminated site in a densely populated area produces a lot more human harm than a large site in a fairly rural area where there aren't many people. So by using human health as the indicator, we feel we're really capturing more of the problem. This well-accepted metric is called DALYs, and it will be discussed by Brett Erickson, Director of Operations, in a few minutes. So what have we done? Over the past years, we were able to investigate several hundred more sites worldwide, and we improved our site screening methodology. But perhaps the best part is that we now have a disability weight for mercury. I know that's a complicated term, and Brett will describe it briefly. But what that means is we can now calculate the harm coming from large populations exposed to mercury. Stefan will talk about mercury exposure in mining shortly. Given this and other changes in health metrics, our research team here at Pure Earth and Green Cross have been very busy reanalyzing the 2012 data. And, of course, we've been publishing lots of papers. In short, the cumulative DALYs for all anthropomorphic agents ranges up to 17 million DALYs. Over the years, and together with Green Cross, we've estimated that there are about 150,000 toxic waste sites in over 50 countries. We've assessed approximately 2,600, but when you extrapolate it for the rest of the planet, it's a much, much larger number. These can be small house-sized properties with industrial activities going on in their backyards, or they could be huge mining areas. But one thing's for sure, they're ubiquitous. They're in rural areas, densely packed urban areas, and in just about every country we go to. The current estimate of the population at risk in low- and middle-income countries is about 200 million, which is twice what we estimated in 2012 from 100 million. So what is Pure Earth and Green Cross doing now? Well, we're continuing to identify toxic waste sites. We strongly believe that once we identify these on paper or the internet, responsible parties and international funding organizations will take notice. But ultimately, we're about reducing health effects. And the best way to do this is by remediating the hazards in these sites and cooperating with communities, governments, and industries. So it's been a great year, and it's a great report. I encourage you to sit there and finger through it and read some of the boxes. There's a tremendous amount of wealth in it. We have plenty of time for questions in a few minutes, so let's proceed. And I think at this point I'll hand it over to Brett Erickson, Director of Operations at Pure Earth. Brett, it's all yours.
Jack, thanks a lot. I'll quickly run through what a DALI is, how they're calculated, some of the issues that we have with running those calculations, and then I'll just provide a little bit of context for the numbers that we're putting out there. So the first is, what's a DALI? DALI is an acronym. It stands for Disability Adjusted Life Year. And it's a metric that's been in use since the early 90s. It was developed by the World Bank and Harvard University, but has since been used widely by WHO, World Health Organization, and IHME, the Institute for Health Metrics Evaluation, based in Seattle. And those two organizations, they each put out their own global burden of disease reports. And what those are is a sort of snapshot of how much disease there is in the world at any given point and how much is attributable to certain causes. So the DALI, the Disability Adjusted Life Year, is a metric that endeavors to capture both morbidity, so how much disease, how many disease-afflicted years, and mortality, how many deaths resulting to from certain causes. So they're basically calculated by multiplying the prevalence of a given disease times a disability weight. The disability weight is complicated, but the gist of it is that the higher the disability weight, the more severe we perceive the disease to be as a society. So mild mental retardation would have a lower disability weight than severe mental retardation. Mild hearing loss might be lower than both of those two. And cancer with metastasis would be higher than all of those, than each of those. So first we have to determine how much prevalence there is of a certain disease. And then we have to multiply that prevalence by this given disability weight. What Jack mentioned is that this year we have a disability weight for elemental mercury exposure at mining sites. That's a big step forward for us. Artisanal small-scale gold mining, as you will hear, uses a lot of mercury. It's the largest anthropogenic source of mercury on the planet. And previously, we were unable to calculate a disease burden from that issue at the mining sites. This is the first year we can present a calculation, so we're very happy. I should say that we're one of the few groups out there that are looking at contaminated land and endeavoring to determine the disease burden through the DALI metric. As a result, these are just estimates. They're intended to be indicative, and we encourage other researchers at organizations like WHO or IHME, who are far better resourced, to look into this issue and determine what the burden of disease might be. That's it for me. And I think, Jack, I'll pass it back to you. And by the way, I'm available after all this for questions if anybody wants to get into the specifics of DALIs. Thanks, Jack.
Okay, thanks, Brett. Yes, DALIs is a complicated concept, but there's a lot published and written, so feel free to explore more. In this next section, we're going to go over three of the top 10 industries. It's well done in the report. We don't need to cover it here online. On the phone. So let me, I will cover lead and chromium, and my colleague will cover mercury. So let's start with lead. I think most of you know this, but let me just repeat that lead continues to be the single most harmful and deadly environmental exposure worldwide, especially to children. It's one of the few elements that we actually have episodes of mortality, children dying in communities because of lead poisoning, very high levels of lead poisoning, and this is in several countries, including Senegal and Nigeria. With regard to exposure, I want you to look at the pictures on pages 19 and 20, and there's some others, really shocking images. And what you need to appreciate is that the fine lead oxide dust that comes from these processes gets onto the clothing, onto the hands of the workers, into the homes, and contaminates everything. So So hand-to-mouth activity is a primary route of entry, and of course, children are quite known for doing this. But lead doesn't taste bad, so the practice continues. There's no sense that you're being poisoned. It's very easy for a family to live in a lead-contaminated world and not recognize a very serious danger. And we estimate about 2.6 million DALYs from lead exposure from used lead-acid batteries, secondary smelters, and industrial mining. Let me say, industrially, lead is not going to go away. It's a very valuable commodity. That's a component of many parts of our industrialized society, so that we really do need to manage this better. As far as health effects, you all know cognitive damage to children begins at an early age and is irreversible. So you sort of, once this brain damage occurs, it's done. But I do want you to realize that more and more research is linking cardiovascular effects in adults to lead exposure. So there's a lot of good epidemiology, and it looks like lead in adults is far worse than we thought it was. That's the number one problem. Number two, chromium. The overwhelming and primary use of chromium on this planet is to fix leather and hide. Essentially, it's a preservative, and it's used in every country, Morocco, India, China, everywhere. But one form of chromium, hexavalent chromium, is also very serious inhalation hazard, cancer, and an ingestion hazard, systemic damage to organ damage to kidneys. So we have some amazing pictures in the report, and again, we thank Larry Price, but I want to personally thank him for his contribution, especially some pictures on page 9, 11, and 25, amazing color shots of the complicated tannery process and the exposures. Also within tannery, let me just say, dyes are serious hazards. So in tanneries, we seem to focus on chromium, but dyes are also quite hazardous. So we conservatively estimate 1.5 million people at risk of chromium-related illness and from the sites that we've been to. However, when you extrapolate this worldwide to the places we've not seen or underestimate, the number really is much larger. I want you to, if you have a minute, to spend a few minutes and read the case study on Hazaribagh, and that's on 22. This is a very well-studied place. It is dreadful. It still continues, and if you're in Bangladesh and can get to it, you will be overwhelmed. So for that, I think I will now ask Stefan Robinson, the unit manager at Green Cross, to present the mercury story. Stefan?
Stefan, are you on mute?
Okay, here I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Okay. Good morning to everyone. And so I'm touching the third heavy metal, which is mercury.
Stefan, can I just interrupt you for a second? Someone else beeped in. Can I ask who joined?
Oh, this is Justin from Time.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Stefan.
Yes. So let me spend 2-3 minutes on the impacts by mercury. Mercury is insofar a rather special case because a very important part of its use is actually happening in the informal sector. So that means this is finding solutions for that is challenging when it comes down to usual governmental approaches. Because, as said, it's informal, so it's something which officially doesn't exist. Mercury in the informal sector is mainly used for gold mining, so we have to imagine these are a lot of small-scale gold ore mining activities, which means individuals or families or a group of men would mine the ore, then crush it to a powder, and then to extract the gold from the ore, they would mix it with mercury. Later on, they would then heat that amalgamated product, and the mercury would evaporate. And very often, the people work without any protection, so they would breathe in mercury vapors, which has a very strong health hazard, and very often these operations also happen at home. There is an estimation that the small-scale gold mining produces about 20% of the world's gold production and involves about 15 to 20 million people. And it's because it's an informal sector, it's not very clear what is the percentage of mercury released by artisanal gold mining, but the current figures are it's about a fifth of the global mercury releases. In our report, we have been able to identify about 200 sites, which put about 4.2 million people at risk. But as I said, the estimation is that the total global number is 10 to 15 million people. And a complicating factor is that about 10% of the cases, the gold ore is also mixed with very high levels of lead. And Jack just told us that lead is obviously considered as the contamination risk number one. And currently, we contribute from the 49 countries we assist that there's up to 1.6 million Dalis can be related to mercury. The health effects are not only being with people, with grown-ups, but they're already before birth affect the child in a pregnant woman, but also in early life. And it affects the nervous system, digestive immune system, many organs. And WHO considers one of the top 10 chemicals of concerns. Besides being exposed to mercury vapors, the main access road of mercury is methylmercury, which very often we consume with fish. So when you go to have a sushi in the evening and thinking about the report, your sushi probably will have traces of mercury in it. Besides the non-formal sector of ASGM, a very important source is coal firing. But obviously there, the regulator can say we put in better filter system. Medical applications have often mercury. You can also look there for alternatives. Dental amalgam is another important source, but you can replace to a wide extent amalgam, ferrous and non-ferrous metal minings, but also cement production and pulp and paper production. If it comes down to ASGM, there is a series of alternatives to phase out mercury. The important point is that they all need collectivation. So as long as countries say the use of mercury is illegal and punishable by law, obviously this is very difficult then to formalize the sector and encourage these groups to form collectives. But on the other hand side, this is just the areas where NGOs like Pure Earth or Green Cross can serve as a go-in-between and implement solutions in the area. And another last aspect to that, obviously stimulating, is the idea of green gold, which sees that the return which goes to communities and the communities can reinvest then to have better social standards in the communities. This is a little bit like the Max Havelaar for food or for flowers. Let me at this moment now hand over to David Hanrahan.
Thank you, Stefan. Okay, David,
yes.
Over to you.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Angela. I'd like to provide what is probably the more positive part of this presentation. Obviously, pollution has been around a long time, but also the West and industrialized countries have been focusing on it for about 50 years. So We do know a lot. The challenge really is to implement it. It will take time to put in place a complete and effective pollution control system, clearly. But the objective of Pure Earth and Green Cross and everything we're doing, including the work of this report, is to find and implement real solutions. And very broadly, our experience confirms that there are three complementary elements that go into helping countries put in place a really good pollution control system, that they often start with physical investments addressing the sort of problems we've just been discussing. There needs to be policy interventions. Heard the question that Stefan raised about mining being legal or illegal and so on. And there clearly needs to be institutional capacity building, which is a sort of throwaway phrase that everybody uses. Now, we have been working over the past decade to support all of these elements. And we have found that physical investments to deal with a real problem is often the best starting point. It establishes credibility for ourselves and our partners. It gives confidence. It starts a remediation process, as well as dealing with a real problem. We have carried out dozens of such projects with cleaning up the lead that's been discussed, reducing mercury, moving from e-waste burning and so on. And as sort of Anja said at the beginning, we're very happy to talk later about details of that. The policy interventions often build on success and lessons from these pilot projects. And in fact, we found that policy change is based on local learning rather than grand ideas implemented from somewhere else are often the ones that are taken up and effectively implemented. And then clearly, to bring all of this together, the necessary human institutional capacity have to be defined and developed. This is, again, to our mind, best done through sort of doing by learning by doing. International technical assistance, which is often directed at capacity building, can be very supportive, but it needs to respond to local needs rather than being imposed from on top. So the basic finding on this whole solution side for us is that there are effective solutions that can be found, although they may take time and a lot of effort. And for this reason, we feel that we need to generate more support and practical resources from the international community in order to scale up the things that we have been able to do as two NGOs locally. And as well as presenting the problem, putting out the need for resources and the value in achieving results that can be made is one of our objectives in pushing out these world's worst reports. So on that fairly positive note, let me hand over to Natalie Giese, who is the Executive Director of Green Cross in Switzerland. Natalie.
Hello, everybody. So, as found in our environmental toxin report 2014, worldwide 9 million people die annually from toxic pollution. Most of them are children. And these are by far more fatalities than caused by malaria or HIV or climate change. And that's why Green Cross Switzerland and Pure Earth fought hard that chemicals and toxic waste are included in the new Sustainable Development Goals. The Sustainable Development Goals were agreed upon in September 2015 by the UN member states and define the development agenda until 2030. And we are really glad that chemicals and toxic waste are now included there as a subject affecting all 17 Sustainable Development Goals, as well as being mentioned separately and straightforward under point 3.9 of the Sustainable Development Goal number 3. In this way, chemicals and toxic waste are at once of similar importance as other well-known development goals on the Agenda 2030. So what does that mean concretely? For instance, there is the International Mercury Convention, which was agreed upon in 2013. And which deals with the mentioned very dangerous mercury emissions. This is therefore a very important convention for public health globally. The Agenda 2030 now unites and leads all national and international activities for sustainable development. This means it also unites under itself the Mercury Convention and pushes for its implementation. Therefore, concretely, the UN member states which approved the Agenda 2030 are now called upon to take concrete steps to reduce chemicals and toxic waste. So, for instance, there is also lead. We heard about it. The environmental toxin lead alone causes probably more fatalities annually than climate change. And because of the high prices for lead, more people are now active in the sector of informal recycling of lead batteries. Therefore, without suitable countermeasures, the number of people exposed to dangerous levels of lead contamination will grow further. As said, the Agenda 2030 unites and leads all national and international activities for sustainable development and now addresses also chemicals and toxic waste. And that's why we expect now that the agenda will support the existing global partnership for elimination of lead-containing paints under the leadership of the US, strengthen it and broaden it so that also industrial pollution sources as lead battery recycling will be contained there. The goal of this is then to have a convention and also a fund with sufficient financial means to solve this important pollution problem. So what does that mean in concrete steps? So for instance, in Vietnam, in a project of Pure Earth and Green Cross, we could protect villagers against lead poisoning from informal lead battery recycling for less than $20 a person. Therefore, protecting the 5 million people at risk globally from this industry by means of such effective and low-cost measures would cost about $100 million. And this is substantially less than the $4 billion invested annually by the Global Fund to fight important infectious diseases, HIV, malaria, and tuberculosis. So we really expect a big push for solutions for the important pollution problems mentioned in our new report, thanks to the Agenda 2030.
Okay.
So that is our conclusion so far from the Sustainable Development Goals, and I hand now over to Angela.
Okay. Thank you, Natalie. So let's open it up to questions now from the journalists, and also, you know, anyone who wants individual interviews with any of the speakers or authors of the report, you can contact me and we can set that up as well. But let's open the floor to questions. Anything?
Yeah, hi, this is Kevin from VOA.
Okay.
A quick question. Looking back on this, on the reports you've done over the years, do you see the how
can you kind of quantify how the problem has changed in broad scales? Is it getting worse? Do you see mitigation efforts having a positive impact? And do you see people kind of willing to work with you to deal with these problems? And I'll throw it out to anyone.
Yeah. David, do you want to take that?
Yeah, hi. I'm certainly happy to make a start at it and let others join in. I think there are several elements, good and bad. I think we are identifying more and more sites. We're still only know a small proportion of it when we compare with how many sites the U.S. has identified, for example. But we are getting the problem out there. We think most of the worst ones have been identified, and the really bad ones are not, we hope and we think, are not being built up at the same rate. So that's good. There's increasing effort and attention on sustainable development, a large part of which is to prevent waste and with that pollution and all the damage that occurs. So that's also very good. What we are, I think, finding more, and Jack referenced this in his comments at the very beginning, is the more we understand about health, the more we realize that relatively small amounts of toxic substances, typically organic or inorganic chemicals, can have long-term serious effects on people. So the general progress, I would think, is positive, but the scale of the problem keeps opening up before us. So that would be my quick summary. I'm not sure who else would like to call in, Jack or Brett, Stefan.
David, I'll weigh in. Yeah, I think what's interesting
with Brett Erickson talking.
Thank you.
With regard to ULAB, this is used lead acid battery processing. Car batteries are mostly lead. And over the past 20 years, this industry has basically exploded in poor countries. Everybody knows there was a commodity boom 20 years ago in China, and the price of lead doubled. So what we're seeing is that it's now a productive industry for folks. It's an income-generating industry for folks in poor countries to recycle car batteries in their backyard. And we see this as causing an epidemic of lead poisoning in poor countries. Really, any low and middle income country, you will likely encounter anywhere from hundreds to thousands of small scale informal battery processing sites. These are places where batteries are ruptured manually by hand with a hand axe. The acid is spilled onto the ground, and these very fine particles spread all over the community and result in really elevated levels of lead in blood, much higher than anything than we would see in a residential setting in a high-income country. I think that would be the big change. We don't see that as in improving. Similarly, gold. Everybody knows what's happened to the price of gold in the past 20 years. Areas that were not profitable to mine earlier are now profitable. So the rainforest on the east side of the Andean region is being torn open because very small pieces of gold are now profitable to mine. So all throughout Peru, Brazil, there are vast swaths of the rainforest being chopped down. And gold and very, very, very small particles of gold that would not have been profitable 20 years ago are now profitable. So those are the big changes, major commodity changes, commodity prices influencing how informal economies function.
Okay.
And leading to, really epidemics of mercury and lead poisoning.
Thank you.
This is Jennifer from Durable Human. So I have a follow-up question about that. I enjoyed your report last year where you actually gave positive examples of how some of these serious problems are being addressed, such as the recycling of lead in batteries. So in this case of gold and people cutting down vast swaths of forest to get tiny amounts of gold, what is the solution? Is there a solution to help to educate them not to do that or to harvest the gold in another way?
I wouldn't look at the whole question of ASTM as a problem, because potentially the fact that communities engage in gold mining is an economic positive thing, because it gives money and helps the economy develop. Obviously, where the issue is that the use of mercury is the by far easiest, but at the same time most catastrophic way how you can extract gold. Because mercury, everyone can use, learn in 10 minutes how to use it. There's a lot of alternatives. As I said earlier, the issue with the alternatives is that it needs collectives. So collectives obviously are visible groups. So there must be an effort from the government to agree that groups of small-scale miners can form groups and that they are somehow an official economic body. But there are very efficient alternatives to the use of mercury, but it's really a lot. It's not only about teaching them that, but a lot is also about seeing that the governments agree that small-scale gold mining is also a legal activity in the country.
This is Jack Caravano speaking. I've been to Madre de Dios, where the devastation is occurring ecologically. And it's going to be very challenging. There's a lot of possible solutions. One very hopeful thing we saw is a community where they really invested in restoration. So after these people are renting their land, it's being torn apart, and then people are just walking away. So somehow getting that land restored. And we've seen efforts of replanting because all the topsoil gets washed away. And I think that's got to be an integrated part of the overall picture here. We deal with environmental health here at Pure Earth and Green Cross, but not necessarily ecological damage. And clearly that's really bad. But we did see some nice – we saw one miner who really completely restored it. So within 5 years, the land looked just like it was. It's lush jungles. But I think Brett has some other things to say on some of the complicated solutions in mercury mining. Brett?
Yeah, sure. It's complicated. So there's estimated 16 million miners all over the world. Most of these folks take home a couple $100 a month, and they're working in a really rudimentary way to process ore, Ores are different, whether you're up in the mountains or whether you're down in alluvials by the river, and folks are different. So it takes different approaches. And so there really is sort of an ad hoc solution that has to happen at each site. It has to happen at the community level. And there's a range of technical solutions. So there are there's something called a retort or a fume hood. And these are just a series of devices that have been developed to capture mercury vapors. And in some cases, there's been a lot of success introducing these into the community. Folks can capture the mercury vapors, then reuse the mercury, and to some extent that can mitigate emissions. There are also mercury-free methods that exist. So one of the things we've done over the years is try to introduce mercury-free methods. For instance, there's a technology developed by some folks in the Philippines, a guy named Leoncio, a miner, who we fly all over the world. He's been to Peru and Bolivia and other places, Mongolia, introducing mercury-free methods. And there's been some uptake there. But it really requires a mixed solution. It needs a lot of government buy-in, a lot of community buy-in. It needs to be adapted to the local folks. But internationally, there's some hope. There's this thing called the Minamata Convention, which you can Google. And this is really targeted at eliminating mercury use in small-scale gold mining and other sources. And it's a huge step forward. Will not alone solve the problem, but is a big step forward. So there's all these things happening. There's a lot of different organizations working. It's certainly one of the great global environmental challenges of our time. We're working on this issue. A lot of other organizations are working on this issue. So yeah, I encourage you to Google it and look into it more. I don't know if that's helpful or if there's a follow up.
And now that all forms of pollution are included in the SDGs, SDG, the health SDG 3 and 0.9. So because that is now in there, and we, as Pure Earth and GAP, the Global Alliance for Health and Pollution, lobbied heavily to make sure all forms of pollution were included in the SDGs, we're expecting that the international community will increase the level of funding and commitment to making a difference on all of these issues.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Anything else?
Yeah, maybe if you're speaking of the SDGs, I think also an important thing to take home is obviously all what we have been telling sounds very scary, but I think what's important that with a little money, we have been looking at the cost of reducing one valley and the range of how much money you have to invest to reduce the negative impacts by one valley has an enormous spread, which can go from a few dollars to $100,000. But one of the things we've also concluded is that you can have a very substantial risk reduction and exposure reduction with $50 by dally. Not every site, obviously, is you can, or not every problem you can resolve with that, but you can resolve a substantial part of the pollution problem with quite moderate investment if you look at other funds, which at other sums which are invested in the international development agenda.
Okay, any other questions? All right. So please feel free to follow up with me for any additional questions, any requests for interviews, additional materials you might want. I'm Angela at pureearth.org, and also I know in your invitations you could also, you have Mags, my colleague Mag, her email address, mag@pureearth.org, and the recording of this session will be posted on the website later this afternoon. And so I think we're all set. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.